Bienvenidos, bienvenida, and welcome to It's Pronounced Podcast with Alicia
and Senge.
We are your weekly-ish dose of what's happening in the world, in our lives, and frankly, whatever else pops up in our heads. We are best friends in real life, and now you are our friends too.
So join us as we catch you up on current events, talk about a topic that's new to us, and share how we are really feeling. Sometimes we introduce a third and hear their take. We're so excited that you're here, so let's start the episode. Hey everyone, welcome to It's Pronounced Podcast. We're doing it again, y'all. We back at it. It's a new day. It's a new month. It's a new week. I had to think about the, you know,
all of the different time iterations. Yeah.
But we're back. We're happy to be back here with you all. Happy that you keep coming back to listen and hang with us. With that, let's jump into the week in review. Alicia, how you doing?
I'm unfortunately or fortunately, I'm not sure. I'm back in the Bay. Let's just put it that way. I'm back in the Bay. But I tried something new this week and I've been so eager to tell you about it.
I'm ready.
Okay, so I put myself out there and this...
Wait, did you... No, it was... Okay, I was like, wait, has it been 6 months? Is it time to go back to the dentist?
Oh, negative.
Okay, go on.
So, you know how we've shared that we both have missed the... online dating profile situation, right? Like the dating apps, everything like that, like Tinder, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I am on Bumble now. Okay. Because there's a thing called Bumble BFF.
Yeah.
Have you heard of it? Okay.
I have. I'm familiar.
Yeah. So when I was in Arizona, I was meeting up with one of my friends and she is in a relationship and has been for a very long time. And she was like, oh yeah, like I'm meeting this person later who I met on Bumble. And I was like, oh, get your coin, BB. Like, go ahead, explore the relationships. Yes. And she was like, time out. Like, this is actually a friend that I'm trying to make. And so then I learned about Bumble BFF and I was like, that sounds fun. And kind of coming off of our last week conversation about friendship, I was like, let's see how it is to like put yourself out there and make friends. And I'm going on a little Bumble BFF date with this one person that I met. Yeah. Yeah, her profile, she was talking about like being a Giants fan. And I was like, this is a good entry point for me. We're going to a baseball game next week and the Diamondbacks are going to be in town. And I'm like,
I saw that.
I'm so excited because I might make a new friend. We'll see.
Yay. How exciting. I don't remember where I was driving back from, but I was driving past the Coliseum and I saw Diamondbacks are scheduled to play the A's coming up soon. And I was like, oh, that's cute. And then I was like, but I don't do baseball. So anyway, but for you, that's cute. You know, happy for you.
Yeah, the A's destroyed the D-backs, so that's not good for me. But, I mean, I'm so glad that you thought of me. That makes me feel good.
I did. I really did.
Yeah, so I'll have to keep you posted about how it goes because, I mean, it's very nerve-wracking for me. It's like a first date, you know? And so we're going to see how it works.
But it's like you're just going to go see baseball. So it's
that's
like
true.
Low stakes, you know? You're going to do something you like doing anyway. And
that's
then
so true.
If you end up not liking her, then just be like, that was cute. Bye. Or like,
thanks for
maybe
the
she's just a baseball friend, which we talked about. Like maybe she's a friend who just is in this particular constraint of your life.
That's true.
And that's it. And that's okay.
Yeah, because she's going to be going to the Giants games anyway. So if she's mm-hmm. like looking for somebody to go with and she wants me to go, I'm like,
person.
Bet. Absolutely. Okay. This is making my anxiety a little bit lower because it was critical for a second. I was like, there's this, what if she doesn't like me, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, we're literally just watching a game. Like, that's it. So,
yeah.
Stay tuned, folks. We'll see what happens.
I'm excited. I hope that she's cool. I hope she's a nice person.
Me too. What about you? What's been going on in your week? Any new adventures?
It's funny you should ask. Recently, Isaac and I took a trip. So we were like, oh, like, let's go to the city, this new city. We've never been there before and just check it out, see what it's like, right? And usually for me, one thing that's in my mind whenever I go to a new city is like, oh, how many Black people are there in this city? What is it like? Is it a safe place for Black people? This is something that just always crosses my mind, okay?
I get it, yeah.
Safety. And so I hadn't done my research on this place, but I was like just trusting that it was like okay for Black people because it was relatively tourist friendly. And, you know, things were coming up on the internet that like, oh yeah, visit this place, it's cute or whatever. And it's like still technically in the Bay Area. So I was like really banking on, you know, it's okay. But there are some parts of the Bay Area that are they not Black people friendly. Anyway, we won't go into that today. So we get to the city after like, I don't know, 4 hours of driving because we hit traffic. And we're getting to our Airbnb and I'm like, all right, let's find a spot to park in the neighborhood. Now, the Airbnb was really close to downtown, so you couldn't park right in front of the house. You had it was like metered street parking. So we're like, all right, that's cool. We'll just turn the corner and start looking for free street parking. As we're doing this, we turn the corner. I'm trying to like force our car into this little spot that it definitely isn't going to fit in, but I was committed. And I look up, because I'm like readjusting, right? And I look out the window and why do I see this woman appear out of nowhere, this white woman appear out of nowhere, standing in the middle of the lawn across the street?
No.
And I was like, at first I was like, oh, that's whatever. It's like, nothing.
It's, you know, her lawn. She can, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do what you want. But then I notice she's gesturing towards me and I turn eyes and I'm like, oh, I think she's trying to say something. Let me like hear what this woman has to say. And so I roll down the window a little bit. And she's like, oh, there's parking over here. And I was like, oh, well, that's really kind. Like, that's very friendly of you. And I say to her, oh, you know, thank you. I'm going to keep trying here. But if it doesn't work, I'll like check out the street that you're gesturing towards and we'll, you know, come back around.
Yeah.
And then she says, she's like, oh, there's also free parking in my condo. Like, you can just come and park in my condo parking lot. I can save a spot there for you. And I was like, and at that point I start getting like hella uncomfortable because I'm like, I don't know you. Why are you so adamant on like finding us a parking spot? You know, like you've never seen us before. Like, we're strangers. You're a stranger. You're being sus.
You're being sus. Yeah, like overly friendly. Like this is, I'm getting a little like, what's that movie called? Thank you. I was like the Get Out vibes.
And that's exactly it. Because tell me why, after I was like, no, thank you. We're good. We're just going to keep trying. And I like roll my window. I start rolling my window up. She's like, well, I guess I'm just going to go back inside then. And I was like, okay, thank you. And I like turn my attention back to the car. 2 seconds later, I look back and she's gone. No trace of her. Disappeared from sight. So I'm convinced that this woman was trying to take my body. That's the only, like, she wanted mine and Isaac's body. It was going to start with a parking spot. And then it was going to turn into, oh, your bags look kind of heavy. Why don't you come inside for a minute?
Yep.
Why don't you just have some tea? Not exactly. Lemonade. It's going to be some tea. And then we're going to be trapped. And so.
And then that spoon is going to get turned in. And then you're going to fall into this deep. Ah! Oh, my goodness. Yo, you were going to get abducted for sure. Yeah, that's wild, dude. And then you just
disappear from nowhere. So then, okay, so that's like our first night. Then, as I mentioned, I was weary about like the Black people situation there. And we
walked the Black people situation.
Then we're like walking the street our first night just to like get a feel for the town. Plus we wanted some ice cream. So I'm like, let's see what we got. Yeah. We're walking and I'm looking around and I'm like, ain't no Black people out at this time of night.
You were looking for flavors of ice cream and flavors of people all in the same go. You were just like,
yes. And as I'm noticing, there's like no Black people. I'm like, oh my gosh, like what if we're in a sundown town and we don't know it? Like real fears. We weren't, but like still, I'm like, I don't see any Black people. Like, don't tell me we came to a town that like we're the only Black people. And then that must mean that we're the only ones for a reason. What is the reason? But luckily the next morning, I feel like though, now that I say it out loud, was it a simulation? Like, was somebody listening to our conversation? Because why then, like in The Good Place, if you've seen that show, but why then the very next morning when we go to get coffee, did I see not one, but two Black people cross our paths? One entered the coffee shop that we're in and one was crossing the street and made eye contact with me as we were leaving.
Yo, have you seen The Truman Show?
No, I have not. Tell me about it.
Okay, so it's this movie with Jim Carrey, and he is the only person that is not in on the gag. So basically, his whole entire life is a production for TV, but he doesn't know it.
This is just like The Good Place. This is just like The Good Place.
Bet. See, I literally have never seen it. So, okay, so for The Truman Show and Good Place, what if people were like, the producers were like, okay, we need to put black people in. Come on, like, she's onto us.
Yes.
Blah, blah,
blah. And then
because why did the black people, I mean, obviously they made eye contact with you because maybe you were like in the same path, I don't know, like, yeah. so but they were like, see us, do you like make eye contact with us, like, that's sus. This whole trip's sus.
And the other part that I thought was interesting was when we go to get coffee in the morning, Isaac's one of the remarks that he made was like, this place feels unreal, like it feels like we're on a set for like a movie or something. And he's totally right, like it looked too perfect. The streets immaculate, no trash, didn't see anyone littering, like it looked like we were on a movie set. Maybe we entered an alternate reality or something, and something was going on.
Well, dang, how does it feel to be back in reality and off your movie set?
I mean, you know, things are feeling good. It did take me a few days to readjust.
I'm sure. To being a celebrity, a movie star. Yeah, I bet.
Oh yeah. Talk about main character syndrome. But yeah, no, it was good. It was a very good trip. It was very rejuvenating and rest-filled. And now, you know, we're back to the grind. Back to the grind.
A hug. You know what's wild about grind culture? They talk about, you know, hey, you got to like grind and you got to make sure that you work hard. Hard work pays off. Why do I see hella rich people taking all the vacations, though? So
they don't even work.
That's what I'm saying. The
ultra wealthy don't even work. So,
like at the end of the day,
what do you mean I have to work hard?
That's what I'm saying. So I'm like, this is all capitalism because a lot of these wealthy people just inherited shit. They didn't work for nada. So like, don't tell me I gotta grind when I literally am looking at Miss Betsy Ann over here in her $3 billion mansion.
If we're gonna name names, I'm looking at Mr. Jeff Bezos, who's like about to leave the planet. He's not working. How do you take a leave of absence to leave the planet?
Oh my gosh. Could you imagine him like doing his request to HR? And he's like, the reason is like, yo, leaving the planet. And the HR like generalist comes back and they're like, wait, you meant country, right? No, I meant planet. No. Like, I'm not going to be
and
in
I need
Earth.
Several months away. Oh, I'll work remotely. Do you do business on Mars? Because that's where I'm going to be. So,
yo, oh my I can't. Gosh.
Man, any other news and announcements?
No, I think I'm really jazzed about today's show, though, because, you know, we talk about sex all the time.
If people had access to our texts, our voice notes, like they would see this is very, very true to form.
Yeah, like a day-to-day conversation
that we have. So that being said, I'm really excited that we have Morgan here today, and she's going to answer some questions that came in from Instagram and questions that we had, and just tell us about her work as a sex therapist, or rather a therapist who also talks about sex.
Well, I don't know. We'll come to find out. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. So after the break, get ready to talk about sex, baby.
Hey,
let's talk about
you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be.
Let's talk about sex.
Let's talk about sex a little bit.
All right, friends. Welcome back from our break. Today, we're joined by our guest, Morgan. Morgan is a marriage and family therapist who takes a sex-positive approach to her work and is affirming of kink, non-monogamy, and LGBTQIA+ relationships and communities, all things that we love on this podcast.
Absolutely. And Morgan and I have known each other for literally over half of our lives at this point, so it's kind of like a little bit of a reunion, if you will. We're just really excited to sit down and chat with Morgan, particularly about her work in sex therapy, along with other facets of her life and her job. So Morgan, welcome. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Pleasure to
Absolutely.
Be here.
You know, Alicia just gave your like text definition and like description or intro to who you are, what we might find on LinkedIn, but I would love if you could share anything else that you want people to know about you before we get into all of the questions that we have, and we have many a question. So how do you identify?
Oh, that's a loaded question, Sange. I love it. I identify as a bisexual, biracial, white and Latina human female. And so right in my bios, you will find all of them.
So I recently went back into therapy, right? And I know that when I was searching, there's all the check boxes that you can pick, you know, like somebody who speaks Spanish, somebody who's biracial, so like all the things. And so thinking about your role as a therapist, how does your identity play into your work?
Yes, it has become the niche that I didn't know I was going to have. When I started grad school, I was like, oh, I want to work with couples and I want to work with sexual and domestic violence, which is still a thing that I do. As I got deeper and deeper into the work, it was just a constant realization of how underrepresented people are and how it's just, it's so straight, it's so white, it's so bland, like all of the research. And then even when we get into more representative issues, it's still very one-dimensional, it's very black and white, it's very male and female, it's all binary and one or the other. And so how it's shown up in my work is that I am super explicit about letting people define themselves. I'm super explicit about whatever you say is real, and I'm super explicit about the fact that people and the in-betweens exist. And so now it's become a career goal of mine at some point. I want to open my own clinic that has explicit focus on all of those middle identities, all of those pieces that are underrepresented everywhere. It shouldn't have to be such a search to find people that understand you.
No, you're absolutely right. And having a different identity than the mainstream, whatever that means, right? Not being a white, cisgendered, heterosexual man can often come with a lot of misunderstanding from other groups. Mm-hmm. And additionally, something that people can also have a hard time maybe being more explicit with is sex. So how does that translate into your work? Like, how do you see that show up, right? Like, people already have a hard time talking about therapy, seeking out therapy when they need it. They already have a hard time talking about their various identity markers. And then you put the layer of sex into it. What is sex therapy? What does the work that you do look like? And what sort of misconceptions do you find about it?
Well, before I even answer that question, let's just highlight that you even had to take a pause and a breath before you could say the word sex. Like, even in this sentence, it had to be like a let's have a drum roll moment, right?
I mean, seriously, though.
Drag us!
We live in a society that sex sells everything, but don't you dare talk about it. Everything is marketed toward being sexy, being trim, being, you know, the object of whoever's desire. Everything is sex, but we can't talk about it. We can't teach it. We can't acknowledge that we have sex. As far as what sex therapy is, it's really an umbrella term that can mean a whole lot of things. I've had people think that what I do is like watch people have sex and coach them through it. Not true. That is completely false. I've had people who have been under the impression that it is analogous with sex work and that I am sleeping with clients. Nope. Also not my job. There are people that do that job. We love those people. Again, there's a whole market for it for a reason. For me in particular, really what it comes down to is that I can talk about it without flinching. I can talk to you about vibrators, about dildos, about pegging, about different sexual positions, about resources, about what...
Yeah, Alicia is losing her... She is in heaven. Just keep going. Just say
literally,
more.
You know?
I am... Morgan, I'm about to go off, but continue, please.
Absolutely.
I see the list.
It's about the fact that I ask about it ahead of time so that people don't have to figure out how do I talk about this? Like, therapy's hard enough. How do I figure out how to say, oh, and also I don't think I'm completely satisfied with my sex life? Because I'll ask you within the first three sessions, if you are in a relationship, be like, sex, what's that like? You having it? Are you not? Is there a reason? Is there not? Are you satisfied? Is there things that need to improve? And I can just talk about it. It also can be all the way up to like sexual pain or feeling like there are physical barriers to being able to have sex, whether that's lubrication, whether that's erection issues, whether that's desire as a whole, it can really mean whatever we want it to mean. The baseline definition is you're not going to scare me with it.
So it sounds like you're covering a lot of the mental, the emotional, but you're also covering the physical aspects of sex in your sessions with clients, which I think initially as we were like, oh yeah, we should talk to Morgan, and we're asking people like, what questions do you have? Mm-hmm. I felt as if a lot of questions we were receiving were that you might ask what's commonly known as like a sexologist, which might be somebody whose like sole job is to talk to you about like just sex as like just the physical act of sex and not the emotional, sure, mental and other aspects of your life as related to sex. So I'm glad that you provided a little bit more clarity on what different sessions with you might look like and sound, yeah, like.
So my degree was in relationships, essentially, my grad school degree. So marriage and family therapy studies, basically how everything's a system. So what I do as a sex therapist is incorporate sex as part of that system. Because we do not live in a vacuum. None of these things exist solo. So I know that sex is one of the tiers that influences everything else. Let's just call it state of spade to talk about.
And is this something that, like, if I go to a marriage and family therapist, everybody would have this knowledge? Or you have to, like, specifically seek that person out?
Right. So the way that it works, there are I think there's two different, like, sex therapy boards, but it takes extra classes, extra education, extra certification hours and supervision.
I'm curious, like, you know, let's say you're at a bar, mm-hmm, right? And somebody asks you what you do. Do you lead with sex therapy? Because I could imagine people being like, oh, let me chat with you about these things. You just dish out free lessons?
Oh, no. See, I had to learn how to pull that one back because
there it is.
Boundaries and how to stop working are not things that I've learned ahead of time. This is a learned behavior in the past year or two.
So yes, speaking of advice, we know that you do therapy Thursdays on your Instagram, which I think is so dope. I just think it's fun to like read through these little case studies that you provide. Can you tell us a little bit more about, well, like, what does it look like? And then what inspired you to start Therapy Thursdays?
I'm posting little snippets of themes throughout the week that I notice in my clients or particular sessions that just really sat with me. And then bringing it to the people. I am talking about how I responded in that session, usually with bomb analogies, because that's how I talk in sessions, and giving you a takeaway. So the way that they're structured is every Thursday, sometimes bonus if I have high energy. We get the context, we get my response, and we get the takeaway. What do you do with that information? If you're interested, let me know. And if you're following both of these fabulous hosts, I will let you in. Inspiration was accessibility, right? Like, it is a privilege to be in therapy, and it's a privilege that not many people can afford, whether because of time constraints, finances, the red tape behind insurance companies. Y'all have no idea what it looks like to even get access to the services, let alone find someone to group with and then really get into the work, because therapy is just like dating. Like, there is a whole get to know you phase. The let me test the waters out. Can I trust you with this? Let me give you this little nugget, see what happens. It's a drawn out thing.
Tell me why when I was going into my first therapist appointment, I called Sange and her sister and I was like, okay, I need you to talk through the pros and the cons of this. Like, it was somebody I was trying to date, mm-hmm, right? Like, I was just like, okay, I just had my first date with my therapist.
Literally.
And like, these are the things I'm thinking. And so, yeah, when you're saying like, it's like a dating situation, it really is. And it's so anxiety inducing for anybody trying to enter into it.
Right. And this is, again, a tangent because I do those. But that is also one of the stigmas that, like, I want to sit here and, like, debunk, is that if you have a bad therapy experience, not because therapy is bad. In the same way that if you have a bad relationship or a bad first date, then you need to be single forever. It's that it's a process to find the part that works for you.
I feel like that needs to be said again and loudly and slowly, because there are some people who are going to just, it's going to go completely over their heads. Like, they need to hear that. They need to hear that.
everybody pictures therapy as this, like, oh, how are you feeling about that? Please tell me more. And and taking notes and taking notes. I'm the kind of therapist that I've literally said to a client before, you're full of shit, try that again. Like, it's all about personality. And just because you find someone that you don't groove with, or that you maybe you see them for 5, 10, 20 sessions and you're like, really, actually, this isn't helping me in the way I thought it would. And then you break up with the therapist. Like, I've had therapy breakups before. This is truly no different than being out on the dating scene, except this person is going to heal all your bullshit instead of cause more of it, ideally.
And also that you pay this person, you don't pay the people that you're going on dates right. with. Like, I feel like, well, at least for me, I would feel very timid, right? Like, I'm like, oh no, but we have this relationship. And I'm like, but like, I'm paying this person. And it feels weird to essentially fire someone mm-hmm. when it's not working out. But yeah. on the reverse end of that, like, I'm paying you to do a job and you're not doing the job. And the same Correct. Way that if I hired a contractor to do work in my house and it wasn't satisfactory, I would fire them. Like, right. this is the same sort of engagement.
It is a
like,
service.
I'm Absolutely. Hiring you to do work on me, my soul, my person, and it's not turning out the way I wanted. So we're going to part ways. What sort of trends are you seeing in your work about like what people are asking you? What sort of things are they bringing up?
In a COVID world, I think the most, like, to go to the broadest terms of it, boundaries and taking care of yourself. Because now that everybody is working from home, nobody knows how to stop working. And or people are coming in expecting to be as productive in their home as they were in an office setting. And so a lot of my friends that I've noticed in the past year have been around guilt and shame about like productivity. And how do I transition from being away from home to now I'm home all the time. I can't talk to anybody and I'm not being productive. And why aren't you being productive? And help me be productive because I'm a failure, because it always goes right to that mess.
This is something that I've specifically had a question about, but luckily somebody else co-signed and asked the question for me. So
we love the transparency of like, really, this is for me and I have a bonus excuse.
One of the things that you shared was like, now that everybody's at home, like their life looks a lot different. And so for one of our fan questions, it's specifically about masturbating, because they used to masturbate when folks weren't home.
Sure.
And now they're trying to find different ways to do it because everybody's around all the time. And I know this person is a parent, so they have
Right.
children that are not going to school.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if you have any thoughts in that regard.
Absolutely, I have thoughts. I would say the first thing that comes to my head is, oh, shower. Got it. Go. I'm not going to presume any anatomy, gender, genitalia pieces. No matter what, there, we can get creative in a shower. Especially if we turn on some music or something to A, set the mood, and B, drown out any noises that may or may not happen as we're going into this experience. We could also turn it into something that we're turning it into taboo and leaning into that, right? Like, oh my God, people are home. Take you back to high school days of like, what does it mean to sneak around? And guess what? You got creative when you were a teenager. You can probably get creative when you're a parent and figure out a way to turn it into something that excites you instead of, oh, I don't have time for this, or I don't have the energy, which is totally real. And you still deserve it.
The flashbacks you're giving me. Incredible.
Okay, so another question, kind of in line with that. This person's wondering, why are they always so horny? They're like, is it normal to be this horny? Why am I always so horny?
First of all, is it a problem to be horny? Is there shame around it? Is it guilt? Is it societal expectations that are trying to shove you in a box and we say unpack that? Is it, like, is it your idea that it's a problem to be horny? Is it inconvenient because you can't feel satiated? Like, I have so many follow-up questions to this question. And I will say as a blanket statement, whether we're talking about sex therapy or any genre of therapy, am I normal is like the most common question you will ever hear ever, ever, ever in the history of ever. what is normal? Who decides normal? Who defines normal? Hint, old white men that are straight and far too old to be governing, they're the ones that decide normal. If the question that's under your question is, am I alone in this? Absolutely not, you're not alone. That's usually what's there. Alicia is having a very strong reaction.
I'm having my own therapy session. I'm so glad the listeners are taking a ride with me because this is beautiful. I mean, if you honestly, if you frame it that way, if somebody being like, is this normal? Really, at the core of it means, am I alone? Right. Like, there has to be other people out there, but I'm just too nervous to ask the question in a public forum, right. You know?
Or I don't know anyone that looks like me or has my upbringing.
But, I mean...
The fact that you were not muted and it was still just
both of us.
This is just how we engage. It's like mm-hmm. No, but I mean, I feel like
I call those therapy mic drops. Yeah.
I feel like this is why there are so many group chats that exist. Like, we have a group chat between Alicia, myself, and one other person where this is the kind of stuff that we talk about because. Like mm-hmm. you said, like, who else would we talk to about this? Like, where else would we ask these questions in our lives? Right. Because nobody else that we know is talking about it openly.
I also want to give, like, a somewhat real answer to that question, too, because I know all I did was answer someone's question with more questions. My clients hate that. Let's bring in the context that, again, you're probably stuck at home with shit else to do. All you're going to be thinking about is like, well, this is what's available to me right now. And also, no, it's not, because depending on your living situation, if you don't have access to partners in a way that is COVID safe, there's only so much masturbating you can do before you're like, okay, I'm bored of this too. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, we can watch the same movies, we can do all the streaming, and at some point you get sick of that too. Mm-hmm. And we get a little stir-crazy.
Yeah, that makes sense and kind of leads me into one of the next questions that we have, like around things that you were sharing about like societal expectations. So we had kind of a trend in some of the questions that we were asking about quote unquote non-traditional relationships. Mm-hmm. And I use quotes because like you were saying earlier, why does it have to be non-traditional, right? And some people feel like it is taboo. So some of the questions kind of were looped in together were things around like how to introduce a new partner into your relationship. How do I talk to my partner about what that looks like? Additionally, around things like BDSM, how do I talk to my partner about things I want to explore and try? So what advice would you give for folks who want to explore things that are quote unquote taboo, non-traditional, because they're afraid of how that's gonna come across?
I'm literally grinning ear to ear right now. This is my favorite thing to do with people. Another niche that I didn't know I was going to have is working with kink and non-monogamy. I live for it. It is my favorite fucking thing.
Absolutely. If you ask folks that are close to me, one of my like catchphrases is like, I'm not going to kink shame like whatever they're saying. And then they're like, wait, what? And I'm like, literally, I don't care. If that's what you do, that's what you do. So let's get it.
Yes, there's a sex shop around here that has like signs that say like, don't yuck my yum. You know, like live your bliss. Consenting adults, do what you want. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
I learned that phrase first in college from an Oregon campus called Sex Out Loud. And they would literally come to like different dorms and give presentations about sex and consent and pass out free condoms and lube and all of that. And that was one of their phrases, like, hey, we're going to talk about some things. It may not be for you, but that does not mean that you get to shut it down for someone else or yuck their yum. Right. Just because you don't like it.
It's like, yeah, it's like going to a restaurant, looking at the menu and being like, oh, I don't actually like this meal, so let's fucking leave. Like, fuck this restaurant, it sucks. Like, bro, just don't order it. How to introduce it. There are lots of books, lots and lots of books. One of my favorite assignments that I did in grad school was a book report. It was a sexuality-based book. We got to choose whatever we wanted, and I did mine on a book called The Ultimate Guide to Kink. And it is an edited book by Tristan Taormino, and it has it's basically Kink 101 of like, just like, here are things that exist, and it's essays written by people that partake. So there are chapters on like bondage, and like it has like little diagrams of how do you tie things and what can you use. It talks about dominant submission. It talks about, there's a chapter on cock and ball torture. There's a chapter on role playing things. Like, there's so much in there. So if the question is, what do I like? Start with stuff like that. Start looking into like, oh, is this maybe something that I'm interested in? Like, do I have questions? Am I like sitting here like, that could be a thing. Okay, so fantasize about it next time you masturbate and see what happens. Like, are you still interested in it, or was it not actually for you once you started trying to dabble, right? Or non-monogamy or introducing partners, right? Having an understanding of whether you're looking for something that's just like a sexual encounter, or are you looking to date multiple people, and what does that look like, right? There are books for that too. Ones that come to mind immediately, there's a book called The Ethical Slut. There's a book called More Than Two. Those are usually the two foundational books that people talk about as far as opening up the relationship, as far as how do you talk to your own partner about it. There's a lot of different ways. First and foremost, let me please recommend couples therapy. It's really great for building open communication and skills and giving you a structured space where you can have these really hard conversations with a witness and professional de-escalator if shit hits the fan. And I would also say keep it theoretical at first, maybe. You know? Watch a movie that you know has a scene that's adjacent to the thing that you like and say, oh, what do you think about that, huh? And gauge the response. Like, start to drop little non-high stakes things to gauge interest. And just like walking, we're going to take baby steps before we actually walk, run, and eventually grow up and be full functioning humans. Do the same thing with sex and with fantasies and with relationships. If you think you're interested in the thing, it's always better to go small and stop when you reach discomfort than to go all out, not be okay with it or do it wrong, and then you're both drunk.
Such sound advice.
Let's talk about the fact that very few states even require medically accurate sexual education in school.
What does that mean, medically accurate?
Being honest, using anatomical language, talking about how things actually work instead of...
like birds and the bees.
Right. As of October 1st, 2020, 30 states and DC require public schools teach sex education, only 28 of which mandate both sex education and HIV education. Only 22 states out of 50 require that if provided, sex and or HIV education must be medically, factually, or technically accurate. The state definitions of medically accurate vary from requiring that the Department of Health review curriculum for accuracy to mandating that curriculum be based on information from published authorities upon which medical professionals rely. 22 out of 50.
That means that over half of the states in this country. Math. Thank you, because I was struggling. States
can make shit up.
I was like, is my math correct here?
28 states can either make shit up or not do it at all.
That's wild.
Why is it a lot, though? Like, to me, it's just like, it makes sense that when we talk about sex and things that we're doing with our bodies, that we should talk about it in a way that is accurate to the bodies that we're referring to.
I think because of the lack of sex education, specifically around consent, is why sexual harassment is at astronomical levels, let's just say.
10,000%, yes, go ahead. Absolutely. So this lack of education leads to, we need to guess what everybody is thinking, feeling, read body language, but no one has the same education anyway, and so people are, it all spirals. It's all connected.
What's great about teaching consent, especially at a young age, is that it can start with things just like, can I play with this toy? Is it okay if I sit by you? Is it okay if I give you a hug? Can I give you a high five? Can I have a hand? Like, all of those things are examples of consent. And I think that people feel weird about it when we connect consent to sex, but they wouldn't feel weird if you walk up to somebody and you're like, oh, is it cool if I do this? Can I sit by you? You're asking them for consent. So why do you feel weird then asking someone, can I kiss you? That's more intimate than sitting next to someone. That's more intimate than sharing a toy with someone. And you wouldn't just take a toy from someone or just take something from somebody. If you would, let's have a conversation. But that being said, like, you know, like, it's really not a difficult concept.
Yeah. Yes. This is the work that got me into this field. This is the work that is my bread and butter. It is a lived experience of mine. I have been in an abusive relationship on more than one occasion. And this is the work that drives me to be that support for other people. And to go into those relationships knowing that that's part of it, being able to name that to a potential partner, like, I'm actively working on this, and it might come up, and it's not your fault, and if I tell you I need something, it's because I need something, so let's work on that together.
Thank you for sharing that. Like, I think it's something that's really important for folks to share, but for folks to share, like, in a space that makes sense for them. So thank you for doing that. And I mean, this is somewhat of a selfish question for me.
Self-focused, not selfish.
Ooh. Self-focused. So you share, you know, your experience in your past relationships and going to therapy because of having to deal with that trauma, right? And I often think about when I'm talking to my therapist too, I'm like, what happens when the therapist needs therapy?
In the same way that other people are looking for specific demographics of people, we just are like, yo, I'm a therapist. Are you comfortable with that or not? Mm-hmm. Like, I actually have several therapists on my caseload.
Interesting.
And it just happened that way. I wasn't actively seeking them out, but it just worked out. And it is something that not every therapist is comfortable doing, right? Because all of a sudden people can see underneath your technique. Oh, I know what you're doing here. You're doing this solution-focused magic question. Like, therapists go to therapy, too. It's just a matter of finding a therapist that is comfortable seeing other therapists. We all got them.
That really makes it feel more just normal. I know we talked about, like, normal to who before, but to me, it really normalizes therapy because thinking about the fact that, like, yeah, like I'm going to therapy. And I remember the first time I mentioned that to one of my family members, they were like, are you talking about me? And I was like, nah, dude, it's not even about you. Like, chill out. I'm going for me.
Literally, my mother.
Not on top of mind.
My mother, because as part of grad school, they make you do introspective work, right? Undergrad and grad school. It's like, well, you're going to use yourself as an example because that's what you know. So my mom has read papers where I've ripped our family apart. I'm like, here, you want to see what I said? Go for it. Like, you know, but then we have the Latin cultural values of like, I'm sorry, mental health, what? You're mm-hmm. doing, I'm sorry, what? I love the distinction between normal and normalization, right? Normal is a value judgment. Normalization is, it's common. Let's talk about it because it's here, it exists. We don't need to brush it under.
Absolutely. It makes me just feel like knowing that my therapist, in fact, has a therapist. Like, great. You know what? I'm glad you're taking care of you. And I'm glad that you're getting to sit with some of those things that maybe you don't get to process throughout the day when you have all of your sessions back to back to back. And so with that, we want you to sit with us and process something. I'd like to hear from you, Morgan. As you know by now, we always ask everyone who visits our show, what is it that they're unpacking? So we'd love to hear from you. What are you unpacking this week? What are you sitting with?
Mm-hmm. I have a physical unpacking. My personal favorite. Oh, yeah. I listen, y'all. I'm not new. This week, we have the physical unpacking of a book subscription service that I found, which I have told Sangay about, and it is incredible. It's called Book of the Month. Every month, they feature 5 books that vary across genres. They feature a lot of women authors, a lot of POC and queer folks. I have a gigantic library sitting next right now of my to-be-read pile. And as far as the metaphysical unpacking, if you will, kind of have been on and off for about a year, is the balance between being informed and keeping up with the times and the headlines and being removed because I need to be. Living in the Twin Cities right now, there is a lot to be informed of all the time. And I see up to 30 clients a week because I don't know how to fucking stop working. I have a lot of clients that want to talk about it. If I'm talking about the same thing for 30 hours in a week, I have no space left to be taking in another 30 hours on my own, reading all of that. So a lot of what I've been unpacking is, what does it look like? What is my role in this movement? What is my role? How do I show up in a way that may not look like I am on the front line, because I can't be, both time, I'm 5 feet tall, live alone. No one would know if I go missing. Like, come on. This conversation about triangulate that happened several episodes prior, real as hell.
Not you referencing old episodes. Kill me.
We did that. We did that. That's real. My mother and I will send screenshots of Uber drivers before we get into them. Like, this is real. I can't just go out and go on the front lines by myself and no one would know except for my cat if I did not come home. And so what is it, the thing I'm unpacking is, what does it look like to redefine what activism looks like? Right? It doesn't have to be on the front lines, and I salute every single person that is out there and holding that space and sacrificing their bodies and what that looks like here right now. And I can still be part of that activism by holding the space here, holding the space for the emotions, holding the space for the unpacking of other people. And that was a hard pill to swallow, particularly last summer, living in this city with the National Guard literally being stationed 2 blocks from my house. Of what does it look like to be involved? What does it look like to consume news and also not, and be okay with the fact?
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing, Morgan. I know that I could personally talk to you forever and ever and ever. I know Sangay already had 10 years plus, so I'd have some time to catch up. I'd love if you have like any accounts you want folks to follow you at, or if you want folks to follow other accounts, where can the people find you?
Yes. So my Instagram would be Morgan with 2 N's, and I know we love spelling here. So MorganBree. It is a private account, but just for the listeners here, if y'all follow both Sangay and Alicia, I will allow you to come into this sacred space. If we have a bunch of the listeners that come into my inbox, maybe I'll start doing some Q&As there too. You know, we can do that. And other than that, I have actually had a huge uptick in following BIPOC and kinky sex educators on my Instagram. Some of my favorites include a handle called Ask a Sub, A-S-K-A-S-U-B, someone called Froetic Sexology, F-R-O-E-T-I-C Sexology, and K-Spot Therapy have been some of my favorite handles that I'm a part of. But I would highly recommend diversifying your newsfeed with all sorts of sexuality educators, coaches, therapists, people that talk about the things that you clearly have questions about. Let's find some of the answers with people that are talking.
Thank you, Morgan. I would ask you for a Therapy Thursday tidbit, but I don't want to give anything away. So if y'all want to know, you know where to go, okay? So thank you again so much for being here and sharing all of your wisdom and also answering the questions that folks were too shy to ask on their own. Anytime. I really hope that people, after listening to this, have felt some barriers to entry drop. And so maybe they will be reaching out either to you or finding a therapist of their own to continue these conversations.
Yes. Bye, y'all. Thanks for having me.
Wow. So what a conversacion that we just had. I mean, so many things to learn and so many things that I was left wondering as well afterwards, like especially this whole idea of like, who's normal?
Yes.
Like thinking about like, is it normal for me to do this or feel this way or want this thing? And just like redefining what normal is, and also addressing the fact that you just want to know that you're not the only one. And I think that that's the case in many instances. So
exactly.
Really grateful to you, Morgan, for coming in and giving us the time, giving us your time to, you know, chat about like these questions that obviously not just Alicia and I had, but also y'all had, the listeners, because we asked you for these questions. So I hope that some of these questions got answered for you. And as Morgan mentioned, if you want to continue the conversation, you can find her on Instagram. So with that being said, it's time for us to unpack some things. So Alicia, tell us what you got for us this week. Is it physical? Is it existential? Is it a combination of the two?
It's very existential this week. Okay, this is somewhat of my own like anxiety, like projecting, but I have been sharing a lot of content on social media recently about folks mispronouncing and misspelling my name or just like using the wrong name when they're addressing me. And part of me was like, damn, like maybe I'm like sharing about this too much. But I was like, time out. Every single time somebody like mispronounces my name, it's just like a fucking dagger. Like, and it's every single day. And so it's just, I mean, this is why we started the podcast, or at least this was our first episode of the podcast, was sharing about like our names and how important they are. And I don't know. I think what I'm really unpacking is like this internal guilt I feel about sharing with folks, or not even guilt. It's like this internal embarrassment I feel about sharing how many times my name is just wrong. But at the same time, I'm like, wait a second. Like, if it's annoying for you, imagine what it feels like for me. And y'all don't get every single time it gets mispronounced or it's spelled wrong in an email. And it takes a toll on me, Sangay. I got so frustrated the other day because I was like, you literally see my email and you see my name is signed like sincerely Alicia Olivas and you still call me Olivia. Like, you just didn't take the time. And that's just, I don't know, it sucks. So that's what I'm sitting in. I'm like, damn, I just really wish my name was said correctly and spelled correctly all the time. That would make me feel good.
Dang, I feel that. And like, also want to, I guess, add on to like your statement of like, you shouldn't feel guilty about sharing this, or you shouldn't feel bad about sharing this, because like, this is your reality. And you're not doing this to yourself, number one. Number two, like, you don't get to opt out of that.
Yeah.
That experience. You don't get to opt out of people mispronouncing or misspelling or just using the wrong name altogether. So for other people who, like, if you don't want to see it, then simply opt out. But just understand that we cannot opt out of these things. We cannot opt out of these pieces of our identity, just like how you cannot opt out of engaging with us talking about or sharing about this. You make a choice to follow us. And if you're not liking what you're seeing, then leave. Okay. I'm just kidding. Don't leave.
And that's, but I know. And it's, and I understand that, like, in folks who like care about me and like whatever, like they get it and they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, they'll share those things. But sometimes I'm like, damn, like I know that what folks know about me is that my name gets mispronounced. And I was like, I think that's okay. Like, I think that's okay for that to be the forward facing characteristic about myself, because then I know that folks really do care about me. They will take the time to say my name correctly, knowing that it gets mispronounced often. So Yeah, I'm just wanting to let people know, if you're feeling the same way, it's okay. But mostly because I'm projecting it on myself, that I need to hear that. I need to hear you, Sangay, and I need to hear it from myself, that it's okay to like feel upset about people getting your name wrong, because you it's literally your identity, you know?
Oh, now I'm angry.
What about you, Mama? What are you unpacking?
What am I unpacking? Like, not a ton, honestly. Okay, like, let me give you something physical that I'm kind of excited about. So we bought a grill and it's making me feel very like homeownery, because like, do you really have a house if you don't have a grill? And if you don't like invite your friends over and say, hey, we're just gonna slap some burgers on the grill, why don't you come on? I feel like such a suburban dad saying that, but like, that's
I was gonna say, not you living the American dream.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like I'm really stepping into full like homeowner, suburban parent, like, persona, and I absolutely love it. It's like, weirdly, these little things that are making me feel a lot of control and like capability over my life, and
a lot of pride. In a way that
I haven't been able to. Yeah, I don't, like, a lot of pride. Like, I can say, like, this is my house, come to my house, and I just feel pride in making people feel welcome here. Now, true to form, I don't want all of y'all at my house. Like, I'm still particular about that. But those of you that I do want at my house, I really want you to feel comfortable and I really want you to feel welcome when you come here. So yeah, the grill is cool because I just think it opens us up to like hosting more people and like engaging with people in a different way. It kind of extends another piece of our house. Whereas before it was like, you can sit on our couch and watch TV. Now it's like, you could sit on our couch. You could also come outside and like hang out and have a drink while we're turning some burgers on this grill.
That's hella exciting though. My sister just got a grill and she felt very similarly. She was like, I can just like have people over and hang outside and do all the things. And grilling is such an important part of my family too. Like everybody in my family knows how to grill. Like it's just like a skill that folks need to know. And so, yeah, I get that makes me feel like a very warm feeling. I'm excited to come over and eat some burgers.
I can't wait. And the other part of it is it's such a communal thing. Like we've been watching some docuseries on Netflix about like there's the barbecue showdown or cooking show, which is actually a competition. And then there's other shows that like just trace the origins of like Southern barbecue and really highlight like the community aspect of it, because grilling, like the way like a traditional grilling, is a whole day activity. Okay. And like everyone is involved in it. And it's something that you get into at a pretty young age. You don't just like wake up one day and decide, I'm going to become a pit master. Like, no, you were trained for this. Okay. And sometimes it's an overnight ordeal. So to me, I think that it really does, it allows you to build community in a different way, because let's be real, no one wants to be in the kitchen with you, but people don't mind hanging out with you by the grill. There's something different, and I don't know what it is, but I kind of like it. Like they never say too many pit masters at the grill, but they always say too many cooks in the kitchen. Why is that?
Maybe you're gonna be a pit master, and then you can teach all your little ones.
I'm pretty pumped, and also like flipping this gendered approach to barbecue as well, because I'm used to seeing the men managing the grill, and in some of the shows that we've been watching, that's also been the reported case, is that, you know, the men or the women might make like the sauces and the salads and the mac and cheese, but the men, they're the ones who do all the grilling, and because it's a hard job. And I just like the idea of being like, actually no, in this household I do the grilling and also the cooking. So
That's so true though, because I bought Sergio a grill for his birthday a few years ago, and I remember folks came over and I just started grilling and they were like, you know how to grill? I'm like, why didn't you ask me that about any other activity I was doing in my house? Like, oh, you know how to cook, or you know how to do this? Like, they were just so shocked that I knew how to grill, and I was like, interesting gendered take on this, when they initially didn't mean that, but I know that's what they internally meant. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you see a woman handling fire and you immediately are like, oh no, you can't do that. Like starting a campfire, people think is like a men's thing to do, or like lighting the fireplace is like a man's job. And it's like, actually, I start, between one of my sisters and I, we start the fires at her house anytime we're using the fireplace outside.
I was gonna say, that's such a niche thing, like starting a fire, but that makes sense. It's the same kind of concept in terms of like gendered roles.
Dang. And you know what I'm realizing as we're on the subject of grilling is that I have another thing I'd like to unpack, but it's, I think, a much bigger conversation. Because it involves housing insecurity and homelessness. And so I'm gonna save it, I think.
Okay.
To talk about, essentially.
I was gonna say, so sounds like we have a topic for next time, is what I'm hearing.
I think so. I think we're gonna tune in next week to hear the rest of this unpacking.
Okay, well, with that being said, you have joined us for a lovely conversation. Thanks so much for being here. We can't thank you enough. This has been yet another imperfect production of It's Pronounced Podcast with your favorite gals, Alicia
and Sange. We love y'all. Bye.
Bye.